Welcome to the milk bar. 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 Welcome to the milk bar.
Welcome along to episode 268 of the Milk Bar. Jason and Zoe here with you. How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Good. What's coming up on the show?
Oh, we have lots.
So it was straight in there, wasn't it?
Yes, very. I always thought you was going to say how my week's been and all that stuff.
How's your week been then, if you want to tell me?
Oh, okay. I'm missing my eldest son.
Because he's just flown away to foreign lands.
He seems to be enjoying it, though.
That's good. Where's he gone?
He's gone to Magaluf for the minute.
What's he doing?
Repping, sort of.
So, hello, Alex.
Selling tickets and all sorts.
But is it basically having a long holiday where he might, you know,
yes. Well, you know what they're like. As long as he gets enough money for food and accommodation, then that's all he wants, really.
So. He'll be happy.
Yeah.
And he's at the age where he can get away with it.
That's it.
So, what's coming up on the show this week, then?
Well, we have a jam-packed show. We will be talking to Luke Perry from the Industrial Heritage Stronghold about various bits of his artwork.
And you're bound to have seen some of it out and about. Music this week comes from Starling with Daniel James joining us on the phone.
And we also have Sean in the studio.
Sean Kesey popping in.
Yes, and he'll be talking about the Wolverhampton Pride event this year, which has moved. It's now the 27th of September.
So keep an eye out for that one. But first of all, as part of the commemorations of the start of World War One, Wolverhampton Art Gallery has a very special exhibition. To tell us more about it, we have the Collections and Programme Manager, Marguerite Nugent. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Now, it's obviously a very meaningful time at the moment, and things like the display of poppies around the Tower of London are really setting the nation's minds thinking and mouths talking about tragic events that began this time 100 years ago, and particularly in the backdrop of all the aggression that's going on in the world today. But through art is another way of viewing the conflict, and that's something which can be seen at the Art Gallery at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. We've got a selection of paintings by an artist called Brian Yale, which were made in the 1980s, actually. So it's two groups of work, and they both relate to images of the battlefields of northern France. And there is the result of projects that he did, as I say, in the 1980s, where he visited the battlefields with the curator from the Imperial War Museum, who knew an awful lot about the history of the area. And so they work together, really, and on the back of the paintings, there's quite a bit of information about the locations and, you know, details about the history. But from the front, you know, they look like, you know, nice landscapes. So it's only really when you know the history of what the subject matter is that you start to sort of understand what the deeper meaning is.
So of all the pictures that are there, are they all in the same sort of vein, or is there some which do show perhaps battlefields and things like that?
Well, some of them feature memorials, I'd say, you know, they are sort of slightly different moods. So some are done at night, some are done during the daytime and different sort of weather conditions. So some are bright and sunny and some are more moody and dark. But, you know, it's quite subtle, really.
I suppose it's been done in a way so you can try and picture what it must have been like being somebody in that particular area at that particular time, perhaps not knowing what's going to happen and whether they're going to come out the other side of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, deliberately they are quite subtle because, you know, the idea is that you don't always understand the meaning of the landscape. You know, it looks like one thing, but actually it might be another. And, you know, there is all this history behind these sites.
And this is actually part of an ongoing series of exhibitions that are taking place between now and 2018.
Yes, yeah, there will be other projects happening between now and 2018. Obviously, it's a four-year commemoration. So, you know, we'll be looking to program other things during that period as well.
And this particular set of artworks are on display until Saturday the 29th of November.
That's right, yes.
So plenty of time to go and see it. And the gallery's open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
That's right, yes.
And it's free entry too.
I was going to say it's still free.
Yes.
And as well as that, what else have we got down there at the art gallery you can see, as well as this kind of visiting exhibition, as it were?
We've got our big summer show this year is A Viking's Guide to Deadly Dragons.
Okay, that sounds exciting in itself.
That's an exhibition of illustrations from the books How to Train Your Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's going to be popular.
The second film has just come out, so it's good timing from that point of view. But these will be original illustrations from the book by Cressida Cowell. And there are lots of interactive things for children as well to get their hands on, and things to listen to. And there's a Viking village that that children can visit. So it's a good, fun one for all the family.
So and bring them along during the school holidays, or pop along on a Saturday, because you can do it then as well.
Well, what sort of age group is that aimed at, would you say? Is it a variety for all age groups?
I'm going to go and see How to Train Your Dragon 2, because I really enjoyed the first one, so it's any age.
Well, I'm thinking, you see, I'd like to go and see it, and I'd like to take my son to it as well. But, you know, he's sort of on the verge of being a teenager. But I'd like to take him and get him interested in that side of the cultural... Because obviously I'd like to take him around the war bit as well, because obviously having a bit of fun and then going around more a serious exhibition as well, I think is quite educational. So
yeah, well, the books are sort of aimed at 9 to 12 year olds, but I think, you know, I think everyone could get something out of it. And we've got a lot of other things in the gallery, you know, dressing up activities in our Georgian room. And actually, teenagers tend to enjoy that more than anyone else. So, so you know, I think you'd find plenty to entertain him.
Yes.
And dragons. It's dragons.
Yeah, no, we saw the first film.
Yeah,
and
it's just
he
dragons.
Liked it.
That's enough. Yes. So what have we got going on in the pop art corner at the moment as well?
In the pop exhibition, we've got an exhibition called Pop Europe. And that is all about pop art and European artists and how they were influenced by pop. And some of the movements like op art and Nouveau Realisme, which, you know, had a sort of influenced by pop. So that's what we've got on in the pop gallery at the moment.
And how long's that on for, that particular exhibition?
That's on for a good few more months yet.
Oh, that's
good. On until next year, so there's plenty of time to see that.
Because I know... Go back to my son again. I always use him as an example, but he did that at school just before he broke up, and he was quite enthusiastic about.
So you're just checking off the stuff that you've got to get to see.
Yes, I've got to go and take him up, because he'd love the dragon one, he'd love the pop art one, and I can take him around the war one as well, just to educate him a bit further. But
that's the do the job.
Yeah.
Good.
So if you do want more information, what is the website?
It's www.wolverhamptonart.org.
So that's specifically for the art side of it. And if you do want to find out more about what's going on in Wolverhampton to mark the 100th anniversary of the First World War, wolverhampton.gov.uk/World War I. And you can find out what's happening there as well. Marguerite, thank you for joining us. Good to speak to you. And keep collecting those bits of artwork for us, OK?
OK.
Cheers. Drive
thank
now.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Let's take the first track from our featured band. This is Starling and Dream Again.
Got to be just you and me, starting again, beginning to end. Simplicity, breaking free, see clearly again, all this must end. But I know that is never gonna
Starling with Dream Again.
And now we have Daniel James on the phone. Hello.
Hello.
From the band, do we refer to you as Dan or Daniel? Which do you prefer when you're being a musician?
Well,
it's
Daniel,
a tricky one.
I guess.
Daniel,
yeah.
So it's
your my mother would be proud.
Your Sunday name, that's the way we like it. And what's going on with the band? Because you've just releasing Dream Again at the start of September. That's going to be the single that will be out there. But yeah. What's been happening so far?
Well, we finished making the record and people seemed to really like it. So they said, let's get it out there. And here it is. So we decided to release Dream Again first, as that seems to kind of sum up the album, I guess, lyrically and musically as well. So we thought that should be the first one to come out.
Yeah, because we're not going to see the whole album until probably the latter part of the year as we head towards Christmas. So it's aiming for that Christmas number one slot in the album chart, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah.
It'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be a nice little Christmas bonus, I guess.
So has there been much gigging so far?
Yeah, well, we've been busy kind of recording and writing and everything, and we've done a few little taster gigs. I did one the other night for some industry guys, and we've got a few more coming up and stuff that we're planning for the autumn as well to coincide with the releases of everything. So
with all four of you in the band, do you all have like a different influence that you bring to it? Or
yeah, for sure. Got Craig on drums, who's very creative, very powerful, commands a very strong presence in the band. And then Sol on bass, he's carries this huge stature, but it's kind of always comes up with different ideas that no one else would think of. And you know, he's a very good writer as and singer, as well as bass player and guitarist as well. And then Vanessa, she's very gifted on the keyboards, and she writes a lot of the string arrangements as well in the band. And she comes from a film music background, and so she kind of adds some of that slightly cinematic edge to it. And then myself, I play guitar and sing. So yeah, everybody's kind of certainly got
everybody
their work
puts a bit
out for
in.
Them.
So you, as you say, sometimes in a band you'll get somebody that'll do the majority of like the lyrics or the beat or whatever, and then everybody else fits theirs around it. But it sounds like you know, everybody is like fully contributing to the song production.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and Vanessa and I tend to do a lot of the writing before we get together with everybody, and because one of the things that we quite like to do with this band is that all the music's based on songs rather than sound, so we try and get the songs right first. So we kind of try and establish a good song so that, you know, we could play it 100 different ways and it would work, rather than basing it on a certain sound. So we kind of make the song first and then we kind of find the best fit for it together as a group.
So loads to come, the album on the way as well. We're going to hear the four songs from you during the show today. Next up is Lights. Give us a bit of the story behind this one.
Lights is all about when things go dark, you kind of you see people's true colours, and so it kind of opens up when the lights go down. You see how truly bright you really are amongst the kind of, you know, the darkness and the storm around. So it's all about that, about kind of seeing your true colours.
Well, we'll take a listen to it. Before we do that, though, give us all the web details so people can look, see, hear, buy, and all that sort of stuff.
Well, everything online is followed by Starling Band. So Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all/ Starling Band.
We'll stick a .co.uk on the end, and you've got your own website as well.
Yes, our own website, yeah.
That's brilliant. Great. Talking to you, Daniel. Thank you for joining. You said Dan then, you see. That's where I stumbled. Keeping it posh. Daniel, thank you for joining us. Good to talk to you. Keep up the good work. We're going to carry on enjoying listening to the music, and we look forward to more with the album later on this year.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye.
When the lights go down, you see how truly bright you really are. When you're shining down on me, we see your true colours in the when the lights go down, we sing how truly bright you really are. When you're shining down on me, we see your true colors in the dark. All because the lights are on.
The phones, I think. Jason, on the line we have Luke, who is a sculptor for the Industrial Heritage Stronghold.
Luke Perry, hello sir.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm alright, thank you. Any noise in the background is my little daughter, she's playing.
I was going to say, early disclaimer required. Is she sculpting yet though? That's the important question.
She's definitely doing some fine artworks with my wife, who's an illustrator as well. So my little 1-year-old daughter Matilda's currently making sort of sound installations, I think you call
them. That's the way we'll go with it. Now, wherever you go, there's bound to be some of your work pop up. I know that round the corner from my sister, you've got the people of Walsall Wood and the Colliery Memorial. So I've seen your work out and about, and you see these public works of art, and you never know quite what's behind it unless you walk up and look for the plaque. And that must be difficult in your line of work, getting people to go and look at the plaque.
I think that the key to a decent bit of public artwork, really, is that it's got that initial tug, so that it's not completely self-explanatory straight away, but it's got a visual draw that means that you go and look at it. So there's two things that you need to think about. Sort of like, you've got the sort of first impact, which often in artworks, such as things that you drive past, like commuter things, will be much stronger. So you'll need a really strong draw. With a powerful image, so something very iconic. But then at the same time, you need something that's really interesting as well and that's relevant and that can tell a story. That's what I feel anyway. And consequently, that's when you have more detail and a greater deal of interpretation, sometimes on a plaque, but sometimes the work can tell its own story, really.
Yeah, I mean, something like the Cradle Heath Column, you've got the Dudley Canal Sculpture Trail as well. So there are things throughout the whole of the Black Country, and it must be great being part of that whole culture and knowing that your work's out there and people looking at it every day.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's kind of the reason that I got into my trade, was because I really enjoy the idea of creating things with a permanency. And this country's very lucky in that we've got such a wealth of culture and mixed cultures, so you can sort of go anywhere and see something that's got a lasting legacy, and I really wanted to be part of that. So the other side of that is that you get to sort of, like you said, passively drive past things and think, oh, I'm really proud of that. And so it's good to be able to leave something that's solid and permanent. That hopefully my grandchildren won't graffiti.
Do you have like a trait? So say if somebody who is interested in your particular work would go past something and think, oh, I know who's done that, without actually physically going.
That's a Luke Perry,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
a
Luke Perry.
I've been told that I do. My wife particularly says that there's a visible language within my work and that I've got a kind of style. And people that know me, I think, can recognise things that I do. However, I do try and make them all very different, because with public artwork, it's very site-specific. So if you've got one particular thing that you do and you don't deviate from it, then it's never going to be site-specific. It'll just be, it'll just be a brand, really. So what I'm trying to do is create something that's very fitting to the people of a community and the aesthetic of a community, and fitting with the immediate site and the landscape and architecture around it. So yeah, I think that it's, hopefully I do have a sort of style, but
it's
at the same time, hopefully that it's changeable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you like working in things like metal a lot. I get that impression. Because whether it should be something like the Salt Wells Animal Trail. So, you know, that is definitely heavily metal orientated.
Yeah, there's a great deal of history in my family for steelwork and ironwork. So as far back as anyone can remember, really, we've got generations of either chain makers or engineers. And also, I work in my family's factory, and that's a steelworking place. So I think that knowledge has been passed down, and that familiarity with the particular materials has been passed down. But as well as that, steel in itself is so variable. So, you know, you can go incredibly fine with it in something stainless, or you can make massive, great, big, heavy casting pieces and go from very three-dimensional pieces to very two-dimensional pieces, and all within a really sort of varied budget. So you can deliver something that looks as though it's worth what it's worth. And with big public artworks, there's often no point in going into something like stone or bronze, because from where you're going to look at it from, all that money is just going to be wasted, because you really want to get up close to things like that. Mm. And at the same time, I think it's just very tactile. Metal is such a human thing, and it just feels so touchable, and I love it. I love all the different effects in it. Sorry, I'm getting a bit obsessed. But yeah, it's, I think it's a really attractive medium.
And as I said, by the sound of it, it sounds like, you know, you want to, if you've been given a job to do a certain sculpture in a certain area, how would you start with that? I mean, it sounds like because you want it to be so part of the community that perhaps you might start going into that community first and seeing what the people are like there. And
exactly,
is that the
yeah.
process that you go through?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's quite a modern approach, because up until probably the early mid-90s, the majority of public artwork was, you would get a reasonably well-known public artist and they would come in and go, here's what you want. And if you were lucky, they would have done a bit of research, which would be the equivalent of a Wikipedia page. So really cliched stuff. But the trend now, which is something which I've really adopted within my work, is to go and sort of, not as easily as ask people what you think that you should make, because essentially you're the artist, and your job is to distill all these people's ideas and personalities and character, and to work out what it is that is in the heart of a community in an area, and to sort of distill that into something which is a simple and effective crystallization of that, and create an icon out of it and a new heart and a centre for that community.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a community engagement thing, but it's as simple as, it can be, you know, as complicated as creating events or anything, publications, but more often than that, it's just about finding people and asking questions. So someone will go, hello. Someone will go, oh, you want to talk to Jeff? He used to work there. Or you know, oh, Mary's just this wonderful woman. She's the big sort of the beginning and the end of this community. So go and talk to her, because you'll get a great sort of feel of what the area is. And so it's that often that you can give, that gives you the picture of what you should begin to look at making.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, when I went to high school, which is many years ago now, I always remember that our school purchased a sculpture and put it outside. I mean, there was rumours about it was either the sculpture or a swimming pool, and the school chose a sculpture. But, I mean, it's moved now. It's moved somewhere else because the school's, you know, changed and grown. But, you know, even now, after all these years, I can still remember the sculpture. I can still remember, you know, what it was about. And it reminds me of, like you say, going to school and all the friends that I had there and things like that. So even though it was something perhaps that we didn't see the use of having there, if you see what I mean, it was so much part of the school and so much part of where we were at that particular time. You know, it's something that I've certainly remembered. And I'm sure I've seen it. They've moved it somewhere in Wolverhampton and I'm sure I've been past it. Yeah.
So when you're going into a lot of schools and working with a lot of community projects as well, I mean, you've recently done some work on the Blitz on the 70th anniversary there. There's been one or two other bits and pieces that you've been doing in schools, whether it be the Black Country mural or that sort of thing. So all this, I mean, you've got a availability on your website of details of some of these things, but it must be great fun going and doing these projects and inspiring others to create art as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, one of the things that I try and stress to kids is that it's not like when I was growing up that people said, my parents were always very encouraging, but people would say, oh, you want to be an artist, you only make any money when you're dead, or, you know, oh, here's your art degree and a job at McDonald's. So it's not like that. And probably 25, I think that there's a pretty well-known statistic that 25% or thereabouts of the British export market is in the creative industries. So it's a very viable employment career path to be in an artist and to be artistic, because that's how British industry and exports is working these days. So to go into a school and talk to kids about the fact that, you know, you really can develop an alternative career, and to do that you put your fate in your own hands, and that's really exciting. So you can transfer that through all ages. If you took, you know, talking to very young children about becoming an artist and what that is, is great. Teaching them and getting them to explore their history and the research around their area and stuff, it is wonderful. So, well, and you know, as an artist, you're kind of immune. So you can go in and say, right, do you mind if we just tip this table upside down and cover it in paint? And they go, yeah, brilliant, great, do that. And the teachers are really kind of, they're very excited about it. So you get a great deal of support, and it's a wonderful job. And it's one of the best parts of my job is going into schools, because they're, you know, kids are just so enthusiastic. And I think that, you know, especially under the change of government, there's a great deal of move towards academic learning, which can be quite dull, I think, for kids. So it's great that when I go in, they kind of go, oh, brilliant, we're allowed to make something. We really can make a mess. I'm like, yep, that's my job, making a mess. So, so it's a great deal of fun doing that. And consequently, they can learn with it. So you get them to harness these skills and to create something that they find beautiful and they feel like is, you know, often a permanent part of their school. So at the moment, for example, I'm working with Timber Tree Primary School over in Halesowen, Cradley Heathway. And we've built a life-size steel oak tree, and I've had the kids into the factory. Some of them are going to come in and have a go at welding, and in different schools and things like that, I've taught people how to make chain and weld and all these things. And they've, in Timber Tree, for example, they've used traditional Black Country techniques of hand-stamping their names into these stainless steel leaves which are going on the tree. So you just get to give younger people, and also working with colleges as well is great, but you get to give people who've not had access to this this sort of very physical way of life, of making things, access to do that, and it's really exciting. So it's a wonderful opportunity, and I'm really lucky to have my job.
And I mean, what else do you get involved in? Because I think there was when we were trying to set up the interview, you're doing a life art class, so you're doing drawing as well, you're working alongside your wife there?
Well, my wife organised the live drawing class because she moved up from Brighton and there was actually no live drawing in the area, really. And so she organised this class to basically give people access. It's not really a class, it's more of a drop-in session. And it's at the Katie Fitzgerald pub on a Monday night in Wollaston. And so basically she sort of said, well, I want to set this up. So we set it up, and it was in the early days. It was a case of, like, we can't find any models, so sometimes we'd model ourselves. And that was a big sort of step because, you know, standing naked in the middle of a room full of your mates who draw you is quite an intimidating thing. But you realise quite quickly that no one's actually looking at you because they're looking at their own drawing, and you become an object rather than a person. So that's a fascinating thing to be part of. But, yeah, I think if you're an artist, it's like being a musician or any kind of thing where you're really passionate about your subject, is that you start living the whole lifestyle around that. And I'm very lucky that my wife is herself a talented artist, and we can talk about our work with each other rather than and have a lot of sympathy for each other's sort of ups and downs and career paths. because I think it would be quite hard to be a professional artist and not have somebody who you love as a sort of sympathetic and understanding support mechanism. Really.
Yeah,
I suppose you can bounce ideas off each other as well, and perhaps if you're a bit stuck on which way to go with a certain project.
Yeah, we do that all the time, yeah.
Yeah, I can see how that would be good.
Well, keep up the good work. We can find your artwork scattered throughout not only the Midlands but the country. And is there any stuff internationally yet, or are you mostly UK-based?
Stuff in Belfast. That's about as international as we go for now, I think. But, yeah, at some point possibly. But I'll try and concentrate on the immediate area for the beginning.
Yep, that's the way to do it. If you want to find out more, industrialheritagestronghold.com. Or I suppose you say literally look at one of your pieces of artwork, admire, and get inspired that way.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Drive it
now. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Let's take some more music from Starling now. This is Living Alive. This year's Wolverhampton Pride takes place on the 27th of September. To tell us more about it, Sean Kesey, hello.
Hello, you all right?
Oh, I'm all right, long time no see.
Oh, about a year.
Yeah, normally you do get to come. Now, we came in and talk about the football since then, I'm sure you have, but there
yes,
we are.
Yes, he has.
So, what's going on this time around?
Well, we've actually moved it this year. It's usually at the end of July, but we've moved it to the end of September, and it's normally on a Sunday. No, it's on a Saturday.
So it's all change?
It's all change, yeah. And normally it's in School Street. Now it's in Fold Street. It's in Fold Street car park, actually.
Everything you thought you knew is different.
It is, yes.
Okay.
Any particular reason for that?
Well, we've done it on a Saturday so that people can enjoy the day and night out, whereas on a Sunday, a lot of people had to get up for work.
Yeah. So you're basically, yeah. It's Saturday and most of Sunday morning till about 6 a.m. probably, you're thinking, here it is.
You might as well have a good night out, haven't you?
Make the most of it.
Yes.
So what you got lined up? Because there's going to be the main stage. That's still there, isn't it? You're having a main stage.
Yeah, it's taking place in Fold Street Car Park and Network House. We've got a parade at 1 o'clock. Which will go through the city centre as normal, hopefully with a lot more people able to see it. And then the Pride is officially opened by the Mayor on the main stage at 2 o'clock. Lots of acts. We've got Lucy Spraggan, who you may know from The X Factor. She's headlining.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got drag queens Cassidy Connors, Sandra Titilacamp and Glitter Lips. And some great local acts too. Rose Red, Stuart Wolfenden, who's 16 and is incredibly talented. Chad Childs and Jenny Jones from BBC's The Voice, to name but a few.
Yeah, so it's going to be an absolutely massive lineup. And there's still room for a few more acts as well, aren't there?
Yeah, we're always looking to promote local talent. So, you know, if there's anyone out there that would like to perform at Pride, then get in touch.
And is this number 3 or 4? I can't remember.
This is the third one.
Third one, right. So
didn't we interview him for the very first one?
We did,
one?
Yeah, quite a while ago. But it is getting bigger, and you know, not that it can get much better, but it's getting better even so because he's getting bigger, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and the fact that it's on a Saturday, hopefully I'll add a bit of extra sparkle as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And then, of course, events all around that. What's going to be happening as you head towards the evening?
There's Gorgeous Bar, which will obviously be integral to it, and hopefully the party will be in full swing for most of the night, as you say. But you know what tends to happen with Pride is there's a lot of families there through the day, but as it gets towards the evening, you know, people come out to party and celebrate
and make the most of the events and what's been going on. Yep. And I'm sure some of your stars are going to hang around and probably going to enjoy themselves as well, aren't they?
That would be good.
We have got VIP passes as well for meet and greet.
Oh, right. So how does that one work?
You would have to speak to Martha. She's the one
she's head of that one. Okay,
I'll give you the details in a bit.
Yeah, so basically, if you want to find out more about the event, there is a website.
There is. It's www.wolvespride.co.uk.
And you can see the whole running order and stuff there. But if you do want to get in touch, whether you maybe you've got a stall or a business who wants to get involved in the actual street party itself or around the car park, there's slots for catering too?
Yeah, there are. If you give Martha Bishop a call on 01902 425092, leave a message on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Wolverhampton Pride, or tweet us at @wolves_pride.
You can find all that and that phone number again, 01902 425092.
Yep.
Have a chat with Martha. And say that is the number if you do want to get yourself on stage.
VIP.
And the VIP pass as well.
That's it. Live from Pride, the Milk Bar, I reckon.
It would be cool to turn up with a microphone and have a chat with a few people.
Think it would, yeah.
We
yeah.
shall see what we can do on that Saturday. I've got to check where in the world I actually am that Saturday, but there we go. That tends to be the problem these days. And what else is going on with Gorgeous Bar? Still sponsoring the footy team?
Yeah, the footy team's going well. They got promoted.
Yep.
Wolverhampton football team's doing well last
season. That's just the way it works, isn't it?
Let's just hope that they do just as well this season, even though I'm a Baggies fan.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. Yeah, we don't. Yeah. Enough of
I'm
your problems.
I'm surprised you didn't start melting as you walked in through the building.
Touch wood, yeah, the bar's doing really well. Everyone keeps telling us the economy's turning round slowly. Bars tend to lag behind, but we can see an upturn, which is pleasing for the city.
Yeah, and you've got to do your best to make sure you're the best venue in town. And
we do our best.
That's the way it goes. Right, thanks again. Cheers for dropping in. And
yeah,
keep up the good work.
Me.
And we will talk to you again probably close to the time, I'm sure.
Lovely. Have a great night.
See you then.
Thank you.
Time for our final tune from Starling. This is Fall Down.
In this place before, as history repeats itself once more, then we fall down, fall down, fall.
as expectation fills the air. Once more, let me fall down, fall down, fall down again. Let me fall down, fall down, fall down again. Calling all the boys, calling all the girls, calling all the rebels to this cause. Calling all the fight, turn against the tide. Calling so we live with no remorse. Oh,
that's it for this week. We've got, it's been a busy one, hasn't it?
Oh, it has.
Thanks.
Very
to...
informative. I've got my next day out planned with Matthew.
You, that's what, you're going to go to do the Pride on the 27th of September, so that's in your diary.
Yeah, it does sound good, though, I think.
And you're going to wander around and look at some artworks that Luke's produced.
Yes.
And maybe turn up to the...
the art gallery, the dragon doodah.
You know, you're on the dragon doodah, but I thought you were going to turn up for the life drawing class as well.
Oh, not as a model.
No. That would scare a lot of people, wouldn't it?
A bit scary.
Yeah, we won't go there. Right, thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from the milk bar. 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 Yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah.